Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. Today's guest is an entrepreneur who loves programming, sports, business, and music. When he's not working on his business, he's dreaming up project ideas, picking up heavy things, and eating sushi. Back when he was 14 years old, he started CJK Web Design, where he spent almost 7 years building websites for local businesses and doing pro bono work for charities. He accomplished all of this while in high school and then through college. He's now the co-founder and CTO of Healthy Inc., a software company making it easy for nutrition and wellness professionals to run their businesses. Now, let's hack Kevin Klinsky. In today's edition of I Can't Believe I Can Take So Many Courses and Learn So Many New Skills for Only 99 Cents for 3 Months, this past week, I took the course How I Trained Myself to Hold My Breath for 7 Minutes in 6 Months. It's apnea and free diving training by a gentleman named Christian Wedewey, who's an illusionist, apparently. I went through the course. It takes about 22 minutes to watch all the videos and go through the material. Apparently, it takes 6 months to keep doing it. But when I went through the course, I held my breath for, I think, 46 seconds or so, and I nearly passed out. I don't know. Maybe you can do better. But it's amazing that with Skillshare, I can spend 99 cents and I get 3 months to dive into over 17,000 classes. It's not just me. There's more than 3 million members on Skillshare right now, making Skillshare the Netflix for online learning. You can take classes in branding strategy, social media marketing, entrepreneurship, and even holding your breath. Skillshare classes are taught by industry experts and experienced professionals. So it's perfect if you're looking to build your career, start a side hustle, or go free diving. And the best part is, as a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you're going to get an amazing deal right now. And here it is. Go to Skillshare.com/hack99. That's the number 99 after. Skillshare.com/hack. And Skillshare is giving you, the Hack the Entrepreneur listener, 3 months for only 99 cents. Unlimited access to over 17,000 classes. Take the diving class, take the breathing class, and see if you can beat my 47 seconds. I don't know. I think that's pretty impressive. Just don't pass out. But go to Skillshare.com/hack99. Pay 99 cents. Get 3 months and 17,000 classes. Skillshare.com/hack99. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest, Kevin. Welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be on.
Absolutely my pleasure. And I think this is going to be cool. We had a little bit of difficulty getting on, but we're here and let's jump into it, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, Kevin. As an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your success so far?
Yeah. So the one thing I do that I think I'm really, really good at is being able to take these really large problems that seem unapproachable or just, you know, you don't see the road forward. And then I'm able to go ahead and break those down into sub problems and break those sub problems down into sub problems. We're at the point where you go for something incredibly audacious that sounds, you know, close to impossible, something where it's, hey, it's a bunch of these smaller actionable items that you can go through and actually target and complete.
So like audacious to down to manageable. Can anything be too audacious of a goal to break down into sub problems like this?
Obviously, there's a timeline with anything and with any of the sub problems, but I really do think when you start with something big, you really can break that down and, you know, continue to break that down further. And as I do that, I really like to keep two things in mind. One is I really try to avoid the idea of any silver bullets. So basically anything where, hey, if only this happens and I can do this, like this is going to change everything. We're instead trying to make it where, hey, everything's more of like a step forward versus a gigantic leap. And also really trying to avoid things where it's like an if only, where, hey, if only we had this resource or if only we were able to do this, we'd be able to do it. Because if you're getting stuck on those two things where you either need one thing to have this gigantic, huge, huge impact, or you need resource or something that you don't have at the date, you've not broken down the problem far enough to a point where you actually can attack it and can solve it.
Interesting. And so do problems always come from this bigger side, or can they start like smaller and then kind of you'll think of maybe the end goal where you're going to get and work that way too? Or is it always working backwards?
Yeah. So it definitely can work both ways. And, you know, I come from a computer science background, and that's like a really big thing there is where when you write your code, you have like the goal of the program, but then you break the program down into sub functions. And I think that way of thinking really carries over a lot. And a lot of times what I'll do is, you know, you have kind of this big idea, maybe vaguely in your head, instead of just kind of sitting and thinking, or how am I going to do this? You kind of start with some really small piece. And a lot of time doing that small piece, even if you don't end up using it, or even if that part alone doesn't have a lot of results, that ends up really clarifying kind of the bigger goal that you're trying to reach.
Right. Sometimes you end up taking a completely different path and you end up almost not needing to solve that big problem you thought, and it's actually a different problem.
Exactly. And it's great sometimes how you see something that seems so hard or seems so complicated when you're doing it just a little bite size, something just clicks and you're like, oh, wait, I actually don't have to do this whole thing. I can just take this much easier path to get the same results.
So you are now running Healthy, or you're a co-founder of it and CTO. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This isn't even like your first gig running a business. So can you tell me, like, looking back, I know sometimes going through it, it doesn't always make sense, but looking back, there usually seems to be like this defining moment of some sort in every entrepreneur's life when they've realized that they either have this calling to sort of change the world, or they just simply can't work for somebody else. Kevin, can you sort of take us back to where you discovered this about yourself?
Yeah, let's think. I think it was about when I was 10 or 11, and I was always big into computers and video games and stuff. And I was on a website, I think it was YouTube. And just suddenly I was like, hey, I really, really wonder how they built this. Like, I spent a lot of hours on it. I had no clue. Google's amazing. So started Googling that. And what you realize is it went from this thing that, kind of going back to big problem, the super obtuse black box of being able to take that, read a few tutorials and get something out there. I think the first thing I did was like a, you know, a white page with like a header on it. And at that point, like, that was so exciting to me because I've always loved problem solving. I always loved like crossword puzzles and logic games and stuff. And just being able to take that leap was really, really important. And then at that point, I was like, hey, in addition to solving problems, I also really like choosing the problems that I solve myself. And that's where it really ties into entrepreneurship, where rather than going out there and working for someone else, which never sounded that exciting to me, it was really, I like problem solving. I like choosing my own problems, really meshing both together. And what that really led me to was entrepreneurship.
I love it. I love using the website. So to me, that website that I was like, how did they build this, was MySpace. And it was just like, some dudes just built this, like probably in like their parents' basement. And now like millions of people are using it. And to me, that's fascinating.
And that was a great site too, because they let you put a HTML code on there, if I remember correctly. So a lot of people got their start there as well.
Exactly. You could just sort of tinker around and figure it out and get your sort of go into it. So you then went to college, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you were in college up till not that long ago.
So I did my freshman year, and then I've been off for 2 years since then.
Okay. So you went to school, though. We need to touch on this, because you went to school, you were taking business. So you went like entrepreneur, like from a young age, wanting to build stuff, grow stuff and solve problems, and then going to school and taking business.
Yeah, that's correct. I was doing business with a minor in comp sci too. And I've always really loved programming that stuff, but I would never want to, going back to entrepreneurship, be a software engineer for Google or Microsoft or some other big corporation like that. So to me, you know, the way to really solve problems and be able to do that was through programming. So the mix of the two is really important for me.
But so is that why you had to, like, was there a choice sort of before going to college that was like, I should just start another business, or I should go to college and get a degree no matter what? And that is just going to be in business, because that's what I'm kind of fascinated with.
Yeah. I mean, I had a couple things. The summer right before I left, so after I got in, I ended up freelancing for this startup that had just gotten angel funding, and their CTO quit on them in the middle of the accelerator program they were going through. And I kind of came in and I helped them build out their MVP and kind of get to the point of raising a little money. And that was a really great experience for me. And there also was a little bit of like, hey, this seems like a good gig. They're going places, like, you know, why don't I stay there? But at that point, I thought that kind of just the opportunity at that point was at least too much to give up. So definitely thought about it, but did end up going.
And then with Healthy, how did this happen with Healthy? Did Healthy exist before you, or was it something that you and a co-founder came up with?
Yeah. So it's taken in two ways. One, you know, how I got interested in health and wellness, and then also how Healthy came to be. So my personal story there is when I was a freshman in high school, I had open heart surgery, and that whole process of getting prepped for the surgery, having it, being in the ICU, getting out of bed, exercising again, you basically spend 8 weeks kind of trapped in a room. And I kind of started to live vicariously by reading health and fitness blogs and got really, really into weightlifting and wrestling and general wellness. And then when I got a pen, I met my co-founder, who was a grad student at Wharton. I had worked in healthcare consulting, had worked for the Clinton Foundation on malnourishment initiatives. And she basically had this realization where so many Americans and people all over the world are overweight, obese, have other eating related problems like food insensitivity or eating disorders. And there's this whole group of people out there that were clinically proven to be helpful for them, but no one was seeing them, or at least not nearly enough. So what we initially did was, her initial idea was to build a marketplace, right, where we would connect the providers with the client, pair them together, and just make that process easier. So she had been working on that idea for a while before that. And I really came and brought more of like the tech and startup background. And then when we did that, what we realized was that building a two-sided marketplace is really, really hard. And the software we were building to enable that marketplace had a lot of value in and of itself.
So then you had to decide whether to sort of pivot into this or to really try and force the marketplace?
Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of started naturally. So we launched a pilot. We had a couple clients on and we did that. And a lot of the software that you need to allow people to meet with providers, so things like scheduling, things like the telehealth, right? Kind of all these basic things. People are using them and they were like, hey, you know, I like that I can find clients through you, but I'd really like to use this for my own clients as well. And that was really the point where, you know, it started to make a lot of sense. And I think what really sealed it was we had someone look at the site. This was the first version. Black and white font, Times New Roman, missing a lot of features. A lot of the features there didn't totally work, but they saw this and they liked it so much and they believed in it that they basically paid for you up front. And I had been spending probably 5 years building things, working on things kind of in a black box where I never showed it to customers, no one really used it. And the fact that we built this and we put it in front of people and they really liked it, even at an early stage, was really what the moment for me was like, hey, we should become this software as a service company selling the software.
And what were sort of like the hurdles to, like, I can only assume, I'm Canadian and so healthcare is different up here, mm-hmm. but still just healthcare in general is, there's a lot of red tape involved, I'm sure. So what sort of hurdles did you have to overcome to even be able to create software that health practitioners could use?
Yeah, so definitely a big hurdle, but also looking back, a big advantage for us is the U.S. has this big rule called HIPAA, Canada's something similar called PHIPA, which basically talks about how you deal with health records and health data and how you are able to store that electronically and how do you ensure patient privacy. And that was a big thing where it means that a lot of the tools that these potential customers could potentially use, because they weren't built from the ground up for medical use, they just didn't meet the security standards they needed. So that was a big hurdle, but also a big opportunity where other people weren't in that space because of that hurdle. And the fact that we were able to take that on and clear it ended up being really impactful when it came to our growth.
Yeah, it's like, there's this barrier to entry for, like, it's not like lots of software where it's just like, well, anybody can just kind of copy you now and go in, because there is that hurdle.
Yeah, it's, the law itself is super obtuse and the regulations that you have to do to set it up is really hard and it's really time consuming. And once you have it up there, it's great. I mean, it's still something that one of our top priorities, something we really have to actively manage, but it's a huge deterrent to other people. And it's also why this space was as wide open as it was because I think this deterred a lot of people from getting into it or even trying it.
And so when you decided to make this pivot and turn into software, like sort of forward-facing software for the consumer to use mm-hmm. in their practice, how did you go about getting your first customers?
Yeah, so what we really did is, and this is even before we even started selling it, was we were talking to potential customers. So my co-founder, even before I met her, had called like hundreds of these dietitians and other health professionals, had talked to them a lot, learned a ton about the industry and what they were looking for, and learned a lot about what their current solution was. And that's really what started what we were doing. Was the first version of the site was built basically solely off of customer feedback. The second version was based on solely feedback, and every iteration, every change is normally rooted in feedback we've gotten from customers. So even before that sale, really talking to them. And then when it came to selling, one, a lot of the people who've been with us kind of through that initial build out and through some of the pilots were some of our initial customers. Yeah, and it's also just kind of really starting from there, just doing things, you know, this is the Paul Graham quote, doing things that don't scale, just really all we did when we were getting started. And that's really how we're able to get those kind of first few customers, which to me, going from zero to one customer is almost a bigger leap than going from, you know, one to a million.
Yeah, it is. When you went for those first like the first customer or the first 100 customers, say? I know that now you guys are, it looks like you're targeting like dietitians, health coaches, massage therapists, naturopaths, nutritionists, mm-hmm. chiropractors. Mm-hmm. Who did you target first? Or did you just sort of blanket it out and then sort of sift through and be like, oh, these are the people that are most interested?
Yeah. So we were registered dietitian specific when we started. That was on our marketing. That's all we did. It was on the site. All the wording was for that. So that's really what we targeted. And I think starting in, you know, they're really powerful. And for them specifically, it takes a ton of education to become an RD. They knew so much and they were really out there. And it was also a small enough group, very tight knit, where when we started making inroads, you know, customer referrals and stuff like that became easy, or easier than it would be in a wider space, because we were really able to kind of master that one space and learn everything about it.
So, I mean, I'm realizing now I'm asking you all these marketing questions as the CTO of the company, but you have like a complete grasp on it.
Yeah.
Like, is the company the size where you, both of you have to just kind of cover most of everything?
Not anymore, which is nice. I mean, there was a point where I was doing sales calls, right? Like I was doing, this is a long time ago. I haven't done it in a while, but we were basically, we had customers coming in. We had a small team. We need people to do sales calls. So I was taking a sales calls, and it's a lot of fun. And I do think, especially coming from a tech perspective, it's easy to kind of get isolated from your user base. So being able to do the sales calls with potential prospects and support. So, you know, even though we now do have a, you know, a full support team, I still, you know, super active on our support channels. I'm taking customer calls. I'm doing screen shares. I'm responding to our live chat, because that's really, I think, how you do get in touch with your customer base and how you have a good idea. And really also when it comes to evaluating other potential hires or candidates like that, you don't need to be as good as them at the job, but having some understanding of what they're going to be doing, I think, is really important when it comes to hiring as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And knowing and being there on the ground, making the sales calls and in touch with the customers is essential at the beginning. But it's also hard when you start pulling out to stay in touch with those people. So throughout this growth, I'm just, have you guys taken funding to do this growth?
Yeah. Yeah. We have taken funding. So we're venture funded.
Okay. So does that give you also like a team of advisors now to guide you through this process?
Yeah. I mean, it's been great. So we have a lead investor who's fantastic. He started two or three companies himself that all got acquired by like JP Morgan and LinkedIn. So incredibly, incredibly knowledgeable in that space on the investor side. And then we've also been able to do is kind of on our core customer side, the dietitians, people like that. We have a lot of friends in the industry there who've been in it for a while, who are also very helpful as advisors.
Oh, wow. So you got the business side, the business side of both. For your customers and also for the growth of Healthy itself.
Yeah. And that's really the mesh. Like there's a lot of stuff you can apply from like the general business principles or general startup principles to a company like this. And there's also stuff you can't. And that's why not being in only one chamber, being able to really take in voices from both and mix them together for the best result is really important.
It is absolutely important. But before we get too far with Kevin, I just want to ask you one question. What drives the value of your business? Is it customers, contracts, culture? To really truly understand this, we need insights into our customers, clients, and markets. To do this simply and beautifully, we need Typeform. Typeform is versatile. You can use it at every stage of your funnel to research for lead generation, sell stuff with Stripe integrations, tutorials, quizzes, and even FAQs. The results don't lie. Typeform has a 57% completion rate on surveys. That's against the industry average of 20%. So what is the difference, you might ask? Typeform's one question at a time interface. It creates a memorable user experience. You can use images, animated GIFs, and even video to express yourself more fully. Remember, what you ask matters, and how you ask is everything. Sign up for free today at typeform.com/hack, and there's a special offer for Hack the Entrepreneur listeners like you. You can upgrade to their pro account and you'll get 30% off for the first 6 months. That's typeform.com/hack. Now, let's get back to the conversation. Right. So let's move, if we can, to projects.
Sure.
Projects is a loose term, Kevin. So whether it's a marketing project or like a product project you're going to take on. You told us at the beginning, you have this skill of taking big, big projects or ideas and breaking them down to small. But what is the process you guys are going through now? And if that's a written process or just sort of an internal process you muddle through, but what's the process you're going through now to decide that one of those big ideas, the big project, is even worth going through the effort of breaking down to accomplish?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So I think one is, when you think about the product side of ours, how do we change the product? How do we build that? The way we really do it is based on customer feedback, and we really look at two things. And this really goes for general, even beyond product, just when it comes to other team members or advisors. We look when people are converging on feedback. So if we're hearing from four or five people that, like, we should do this, or this makes a ton of sense, that stands out. And then what you also do, and what I think you really have to do, is occasionally you get these super unique kind of nuggets of wisdom that make a lot of sense, whether it's for a feature or for a new marketing channel or anything like that, that's worth doing. And then once you have those, I think the next step is really putting your toes in the water without having to commit too much. So take marketing, for example. Rather than pouring, you know, $200,000 in a Facebook campaign, doing smaller scale testing, getting initial signal results, and that it's going to be well used. For features, similar stuff, you don't have to build out, you're building a feature, you don't have to put in every little sub feature, every little bell and whistle. If you get the core ideas right, you can see usage, see results. And then once you're seeing the results that you want or expect, that's when you can really double down and put in the resources to take it, you know, over the 100% line.
Right. And are you constantly in sort of like tweaking, bug fixing, moving the product forward itself anyways, without even big projects?
We release new versions of the site multiple times a day. That's one of the great things about a web version, and the way our tech infrastructure is set up, is it's like a few words for me, and we can kind of push the new version. So we move really quickly there. With marketing, same thing, constantly trying out new things, doing small scale experiments, in addition to staying on the paths of things that we know are working and that have been proven to be helpful.
Right. So from the marketing perspective, what are, like, I asked you how you got your first customers, and it was just outreach, phone calls. But how is, you mentioned Facebook ads, but is it like content marketing? Is it paid advertisement? Is it, what is it you guys are doing now?
Yeah. So once again, I'm a little more hands-off on this than I once was, but it's a mix. We're definitely still doing paid marketing, content marketing, and then still outreach, and really just talking to customers and potential customers. So going back to my thing about silver bullets, like, we don't have just one crazy trick that no one wants you to know about that's going to, like, that really completely change our business. It was just doing things and then doing them slightly, slightly, slightly better over enough time, where, and then kind of bringing more resources and bringing more people to increase capacity there as well, just has really had the biggest impact.
All right. So how about, rather than me continually asking you about things that are sort of out of your, or off your plate nowadays, what does your day or your week look like at this point?
Yeah. So I run a product team here. So it's everything from going in, collecting feedback, talking to other team members, pulling in from marketing and sales and support and what they're working on. And then from there, working with our tech team to plan out what we're basically going to do for the next 2 weeks, as far as feature-wise, bug fixes, improvements, anything like that. From there, then my day is really spent partially coding, although not as much as I used to do, and, you know, not as much as I like all the time. Support, customer calls, meetings with our enterprise clients, making sure that they're fully set up and are all, you know, good to go there. So it's really a mix. And what I really do love about startups and healthy specifically is I come in every day and I never have, like, an exact idea of what's going to happen or what's going to pop up. And I also I'm able to do things that, like, objectively are kind of boring or not incredibly fun. I'll, like, go through a lot of emails or go through support channels or, like, do this kind of rote data stuff. But because I love what we're doing and I love the company and love where we're going, it's amazingly fun versus, you know, out of context, it would be mind numbing sometimes. So it's always good days.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you miss the coding?
Yeah. So I still do some, but I mean, you know, when we started, it was just me and my co-founder, and this is, you know, years ago, and I was doing like 18-hour days of just programming, right? And building big features too. So, like, you know, you go in there and there's a whole new feature on the site in 3 days. And then obviously as you go and as you have a core feature set and as we're really working on perfection, that's become less of a thing. So it was a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to look back on, but I also love the fact that now we're a big company. We have the resources, like all these things that we didn't have back then. So I never want to go back, but it was definitely a fun time. It is definitely nostalgic.
Do you feel though, like, as the CTO of a rapidly growing company, a tech company, 100%. So do you feel though that you have to stay ahead of the tech team, of the developers? Like you built it all, you knew it all, but at some point you're going to be hiring people that just know way more than you, and the tech is going to, because you're going to get shifted out of coding at all, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So how do you sort of deal with that mentally and also, like, throughout your day, to know that you're going to get surpassed, but you're still going to be in charge of the coders?
Yeah. So one thing that I just kind of love in general is being surrounded. If you're the smartest person in the room, you're doing it wrong, right? Like, you want to be surrounded by people who who know more than you in your primary subjects and different subjects, really everything. And that to me is, you know, is, has really started to happen. It's also just really exciting in general. But as far as giving up, I mean, it's something I've had to catch myself doing, right? Where there are things where to me, it's like, oh, if I just do this myself right now, like we could get it done in an hour versus if I have to train someone else to do it, it would take 90 minutes or 2 hours. And startups sometimes move so quickly, you feel like that 30 minutes can be a lot of time. But so I've really had to like kind of step back and be like, okay, it's fine. You know, do the training, get people really up to speed and beyond you. Because that's when you're really able to make an impact, is when you can scale across a lot of new hires versus, you know, trying to take on the world yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. So 2 years, 3 months into Healthy, growing rapidly now, I'm sure you're picking up speed as it probably starts off a bit slower. Where will you guys be in a year from now if everything goes according to your plans?
Yeah. So this is always a question that always throws me off, because when I think about where we started and where I thought we were going to be, I had no clue. And if you told me where I am now, it'd be absolutely amazing and beyond all my wildest expectations. And now I look at where we want to be in a year, and it's, once again, is going to be like a totally different ballpark. So ideally much larger, and really just kind of continue the path that we're on of really rapid growth, getting a lot of really amazing customers on board and building a fantastic team.
Nice. And amongst all this, it started off with you, I mean, having open heart surgery as a teen and then getting really, really into health. With all of this going on, it sounds slightly chaotic. Do you still manage to upkeep your health?
I do okay. Like, you know, but before I started this, I was working out like, you know, 4 or 5 days a week, and I was playing a sport in college, and I'd been a two-sport varsity athlete in high school, and really it was like a big thing. And this is definitely busy. So you have a lot less time for everything with this. So I do okay, but probably not as much as I'd like.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, Kevin, this has been an absolute blast, man. We've talked about Healthy all throughout this conversation, but there's a lot of people listening and some people can probably be benefited from it. So could you please tell us who Healthy's for, what it can do, and where they can find it?
Yeah. So Healthy is for all health and wellness professionals. So dietitians, nutritionists, health coaches, chiropractors, as you mentioned. Healthy helps you run your entire business in one place. So no more needing to pay for overly expensive clunky softwares or trying to piece together 8 different platforms together. You can do it all right at Healthy, which is on gethealthy.com, Healthy spelled with an IE at the end.
Excellent. I will link to that in the show notes. What about you? Can we track you down online anywhere?
Once again, like my LinkedIn, I have a website, but it's super outdated. Yeah, I mean, people can definitely tweet me at Klinsky C, which once again hasn't been tweeted out, but that's a good way to reach me.
Klinsky C. Excellent. On Twitter. I will link to that as well in the show notes, as well as Get Healthy and anything else we talked about today. So, Kevin, once again, man, thanks so much for taking the time today. I really do appreciate it. And I don't know, man, just keep doing what you're doing, because it's awesome to watch.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
All right. That was a lot of fun. I really, really enjoyed that conversation. But I think I enjoy this part more. This is the part where we get to go back. We get to go back through the conversation and pick out something that Kevin said, something that I might have missed the first time, but I won't miss when we go back now. So let's do it. You ready? Let's go. Let's find the hack.
And then when it came to selling, one, a lot of the people who've been with us kind of through that initial build out and through some of the pilots were some of our initial customers. Yeah. And it's also just kind of really starting from there, just doing things, you know, this is the Paul Graham quote, doing things that don't scale is just really all we did when we were getting started. And that's really how we're able to get those kind of first few customers, which to me, going from 0 to 1 customer is almost a bigger leap than going from, you know, 1 to 1 million.
And that's the hack. Kevin, you hit me just right, because I love this whole doing things that don't scale approach. It seems to be crucial to the way that we can get started. And I also love how you say at the end there, going from 0 to 1 is almost harder than 1 to 1 million. And so that might be a bit extreme. 1 to 1 million is obviously super, super hard. But that 0 to 1 is probably where 90% of businesses or ideas fail. Probably more. Because we have it, we build it, and we want them. We just expect people to come and buy it, because they should be as invested in what we created as we are, which isn't the case. That 0 to 1, that learning to make those first sales, finding those first customers, takes hustle and takes doing the things that don't scale. I know we all want to be able to leverage our time and use technology to make it so we can sit on the beach with our laptop and have money pour in. But it can happen, I guess, but it doesn't start without the hustle of doing those things first that absolutely won't allow you to sit on the beach, because you are out there emailing, getting on phones, meeting people, and making those first sales. This is how Cabin did it. This is how hundreds of people on this show have done it. This is how you need to do it. Cabin, thank you so very much. All right, so that was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed that even half as much as I did, because Cabin, smart guy, funny, and is building something really, really cool at Healthy. So gethealthy.com is the site again. Head over there, check him out. When you're done that, head over to hacktheentrepreneur.com. Put your name at the top, get onto the email list, and see what is coming next. All right, it's been fun. Thank you so much for joining me. I really, truly, truly, truly do appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.